from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, good morning, all. It's December 6, 2017, and it's OneRadioNetwork.com. Wednesday brings us to the real world of Money Day, one of my favorite days, because we get to talk to a good man, Andrew Goss. He's a friend of mine. I almost said been knowing Andrew. People don't say that, do
they? I've been knowing him
since I was just knee britches to a thing. I've never said that, but I almost said it. I've been knowing him for 25 years, Your Honor, and he's a good guy, and really, don't take him away. And he's a currency historian. He's a nationally recognized one at that. He does a lot of stuff around the country and the world regarding money. He's been studying the monetary system for here on, near on, about 35 or 40 years or so, Mr. G, something like that.
Yeah, it's been 35 years for about 5 years now.
I just keep doing. And so, and then the coin business for you, about the same, right?
That's everything.
About the same.
Yeah, about the same. One begats the other.
Is that right?
It's only from my study of coins.
You've been begetting things, have you, over there?
It begets, that's right.
He begets.
It begets the other, not begets. It's after it's got.
Yeah.
Okay.
Andrew talks about the idea that after he really figured out this money thing, and as he started to study it, that he came to the conclusion, well, duh.
Coins.
Duh.
Money. Duh.
Real money is really the only
real
thing.
Money is the only money. Everything else is some nonsense. I don't know what it is.
It's the only thing to stay. Yeah.
But no counterparty risk. See, that's the thing.
Well, yeah.
When our forefathers drafted the Constitution, they intended money to be independent of anything else. It doesn't represent someone else's obligation. Money traveled. The value of the money traveled with the coin. So when you got a 1 ounce gold coin, a $20 gold piece, that was it. You didn't need to trust anyone else. As long as the coin was real, you put it in your box and hope that you can add to it.
Or you jump in that covered wagon to go out and, tame the Wild West. You got that little sucker in your Levi's, right? And
that's right.
Evidently, that's somebody right. It'll be good wherever you go.
That's right. You know, the problem with paper money, a representation of money for the early Americans, was that it required you had to go to the person that issued the note and actually get the money.
Yeah, that's before these days, there was a universal thing, right?
These days we actually think of money as the paper.
As the dollar, right. Yeah,
we think
how
of
much
the paper.
Money do you have in a bank? And people,
right. Yeah. Well, but that's even worse because that's just an electronic representation of the paper. So we went to the paper representing the coin, the actual gold or silver or copper coin, and then the electronic representation signifying the paper. So we're two steps removed from real money, most Americans.
So when the founders, though, did the Article 1, Section 8 thing, let no state make gold or silver, the one you quote often, they weren't necessarily separating gold and silver coins and a chunk they just dug out of the mountain, were they, or were they?
No.
It was all the same to them.
They also called for the free coinage of coin and silver. So you would bring your gold or silver to the mint, you'd drop it off, and they would hand you those pieces of paper, representations of money, and then they would strike your gold or silver into coins.
Really?
And put it right into circulation.
And with the United States on it? Or?
Well, yeah, because this was lawful money of the United States. This was a $20 gold piece or a $10 gold piece.
Oh, this was, say, back in
1792, yeah, the founding of the mint. So from 1792, George Washington famously brought his silverware. the Bank of Maryland, of course, was the first official turn-in, here's my silver chunks, make them into coins. That would have been the Bank of Maryland, and then George Washington right behind that with, allegedly his old silver plate. That's what he referred to when the note that he sent to the Mint is like, here's my silver plate, coin it into the money. And so they did. And, of course, people are looking for those coins high and low today.
High and low. So when they gave you a piece of paper that said this is worth $1 or one,
that's right,
whatever.
It was a treasury note.
And it was actually made good by the treasury. Could you then take it back and get the gold back if you wanted to?
Of course you could.
Oh, well.
Yeah, it was just a matter of you don't have to stand there while they're striking it into coin.
And, I'm going to watch
you. Yeah, you don't have to watch. You just take your certificates and you leave. And then everyone knew that the certificates were good. Goodness, they were treasury notes. The only thing you had to worry about there were counterfeits.
Yeah.
And I imagine, you know, there was a certain amount
of... sure there was, right?
Yeah.
There's always...
Right. And even with the coins, you know, you see the old Western movies where the guy would grab the $20 gold piece and take a bite out of it. He would...
That's how they could tell, right?
Yeah, because gold is very soft, and 90% gold you can dent with your teeth. And I'll tell you what, Patrick, many a $20 gold piece has those telltale eye tooth marks
no
in them.
No kidding. Now, that's got to be worth something where you could say that Matt Dillon bit your coin or something.
Right. Billy the Kid bit this coin. Festus on Gunsmoke
bit this coin.
Yeah. I remember that episode when I was a kid, 5 years old, whatever. Festus was painting the barn.
Yeah.
And he was painting it red. And he was paid with a $20 gold piece, which was later stolen. And the way that he identified it with Marshall Dillon was the red paint on the $20 gold piece.
That's great. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and he bid it when he got paid. He bid that thing.
Yeah. Well, if you'd like to be on the show this morning, here's a couple ways to do it. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Well, we need to mention it because it's just is what it is. But 76 years ago tomorrow, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. And many people suggest that, and we won't get into it deep, but many people, because I know you probably know this stuff, but many people suggest that this was one of the very first what they call false flags. Meaning... what the real story is.
A false flag would be if we bombed Pearl Harbor ourselves.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And blamed it on the Japanese.
Uh-huh.
That comes from the... You know, you're driving your ship, and you pull down your flag, you put up your enemy's flag, and then you bomb somebody. And they look through the binoculars and go, oh, look at the flag on that ship. That's China's ship. China just bombed us.
Yeah, the thing in Vietnam.
Correct.
That one.
The false flag. Well, in the case of Vietnam, the Gulf of Tonkin.
The Gulf of Tonkin, right.
They said the North Vietnamese gunboats attacked the ship. Right, our ship. That's what started the Vietnam War.
Whoops.
I don't believe there was an attack at all. So it was...
Fake news.
That's a little different. Remember the Maine, when the battleship Maine was blown up in Havana Harbor starting the Cuban-American War, the Spanish-American War in 1898. That was a false flag. That was conducted by people other than who it was blamed on. Right?
Similar to what maybe 9/11 could be.
Yeah, blamed on people who didn't do it.
Who didn't do it, and there was other people behind
it. It actually happened, and it was blamed on a false flag.
And wasn't World War II similar? Wasn't it Archduke, or the Duke of...
was World War One.
The Duke was shot by somebody, and it wasn't the same person, it wasn't the real person that shot him or something?
Well, no. It was an excuse to get into a war that had already been brewing, and most certainly, you know, the sides lined up and off they went. But that actually happened. The Archduke was actually assassinated. So a false flag is when you essentially, take your equipment and make it look like someone else's and do everything you can to make someone else look like the culprit. Other than yourself.
So you're kind of
Reichstag,
kind of framing somebody.
Yes, yeah. Would be a good false flag. The Reichstag fire, where Adolf Hitler took over, somebody burned the German parliament, if you will, and you know that was blamed on dissidents, when in fact it was conducted by Hitler's henchmen to give him a reason to swoop in and take control of everything. So these false flags have been going on for a great many years.
Yeah, I think there are these Sophocles or one of these old, 400 AD. I think he was the original one that said the truth is the first casualty of war.
Of war. Yeah.
So it goes way back, right?
So, but there are those that argue that Roosevelt wanted us to get into the war in Europe. We were maintaining our neutrality, right?
When Hitler was doing his thing, but nobody wanted to get into that mess. Americans.
No, there were those that were saying, "No, we have no reason. We're not going to get involved. Leave that over there." And in fact, a great many Americans were German by heritage. We almost had German as the official language of the United States. Dutch and what have you settling in the eastern seaboard there, and taking over much of Pennsylvania. So we had a tremendous German immigrant community that felt, hey, we don't have any chips in this war.
Yeah.
What do we care if our former oppressor, Great Britain, is kicked around by the Germans? Why do we care?
Yeah, because Hitler was going into everywhere, right? He was bombing London and France.
Yeah, after France said, "Hey, Herr Hitler, come on in. Bring your boys, enjoy Paris." And after the
got nice chocolate here.
Yeah, there was really Europe didn't put up a fight. He came to knocking on the door for the most part, other than God bless him, the Polish cavalry.
Yeah.
Cavalry. Thank you, Gina. Mm-hmm. Cavalry. Uh-huh. Cavalry versus cavalry. Thank you, Gina Pontrelli.
Yeah, she does that kind of stuff. She goes, cavalry.
She does, yeah. Okay, so, they came on horseback and attacked the German tanks, but that sort of token resistance was all across Europe. So Hitler had essentially marched through Europe and taken control. Wasn't much left but Great Britain. Mm-hmm. And so the Battle of Britain started in 1940. Now we, surreptitiously, were arming the Brits. J.P. Morgan borrowing money and sending it, to Great Britain, doing everything they can behind the scenes to support the British war, while officially we were neutral. And so imagine Roosevelt and the boys in the office going, stroking their chin. What could we do that would make America want to go to war?
And then FDR, I guess, in the early 41, he proposed, if I understand, sacrificing cruisers and carriers at Manila to get into the war, according to people that write about this stuff.
Is that suggestion?
Yeah, but we don't know that for sure. That could be hearsay.
Yeah, that could be hearsay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The general direction, however, is that he goaded, G-O-A-D-E-D,
thank you very
goaded
much.
The Japanese into what they did. You cut off their oil, cut off their steel, sanctions, belligerency.
Yeah. People don't talk about that much, but they did. They cut off their oil, didn't they? They just flat.
Yeah, they did.
And they couldn't exist without it.
And there was no declaration of war. It's just like all of a sudden you pick on somebody and say, hey, I don't want anybody to do business with that guy. Mm-hmm. And for no reason, no apparent reason. And so that guy feels aggrieved until finally he says, we got to put a stop to this. Uh-huh. So the Japanese, as I understand it, Japanese ambassador had gone into the State Department to tell them, hey, we're going to war.
Yeah.
And they left him sitting in the lobby for hours.
Wow.
Never took his directive. Yeah. So
the
argument is that somehow we knew that the Japanese were planning to bomb Pearl Harbor. And we did nothing to stop it.
Boy,
so that then we would have a reason.
If Americans really believe that, I don't know if it's actually all totally.
Well, they
true.
Didn't know it then, Patrick.
Of course.
But
could you imagine? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Well, Admiral Kimmel and husband and,
husband Harold, Kimmel. Harold I guess he was one of the top advisor to FDR. They have they have one of his memos I found here, and he said, quote, "There may develop from the embargoing of oil to Japan such a situation as would make it not only possible, but easy to get into the war in an effective way. And if we should thus indirectly be brought in, we would avoid the criticism that we had gone in as an ally of communist Russia.
Oh, that's right. Whoa. That's right.
And they have this memo. This is not made up. Yeah, you know, this is not on evidence, CNN or something like that.
Evidence abounds of, well, look, if you're looking for a reason to get into the war, this might be one. Yeah. This might be one. All throughout the administration. So, again, this the idea, and this is strictly an idea, there's circumstantial evidence to back it up, that they knew that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor, and they let it happen so that America would be sufficiently outraged to step up and go to war.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and I think they succeeded, because the day after Pearl Harbor, Americans showed up at the recruitment offices by the droves and said, you know, take me, I'll go fight him.
But how did he, how did FDR make the connection between Japan and Germany? I mean, it just, well, it's a rotten world out there, and we got to get in.
No, the belligerent powers were already talking. And, you know, from FDR's perspective, he understood that if he went after Japan, he was going to have to go after Germany. They were allies, right? The Axis.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. They were allies.
And don't forget Mussolini. Mussolini.
In Italy, right?
That's right. He was in on that as well.
Uh-huh. Well, I can remember, I was in Paris in the day. Well, listen, why?
Not an easy day to forget.
Yeah.
No. I remember every detail. The Germans wore gray, you wore blue.
There you go.
That was about the difference. You were both a bunch of. Okay.
I remember.
Yeah.
The Germans wore gray and you wore blue.
Worldwide domination occurs, happens all the time. Now, what was the first thing that Herr Hitler did when he came into a country? Well, he took all their gold and silver coins.
Did he?
He
now?
Took them.
Did he?
And
now?
Then he issued this phony paper money.
No.
So you say you have money in the bank, and the bank says that they're holding this much gold for you. Well, I'm going to take this gold and give you these Reich notes. Hope you like them. See you later.
Wait a minute. Where's my gold?
Yeah. So having your money in someone else's control in a time of crises, whether it's a war or a chicanery or a general business downturn or a depression,
whatever,
or a recession, whatever. Yeah. Having your money, your tangible, solid money in someone else's possession, and you merely have a receipt or a register number.
Or an email.
Or today, some
say I got
hexadecimal
this, right?
code that,
right.
yeah. That's
so, so I, and it could even be argued, in World War II, that even those that had gold, but it was not in their possession, right, they got screwed too, a lot of these people.
Oh, well, those are the ones I'm talking about.
Yeah, the people in
when
they had their gold in Switzerland.
In the bank, even in Switzerland.
In Switzerland,
I mean, you had to get to Switzerland. Before you could get your gold, you had to get to Switzerland.
But I know all you Second Amendment guys love the idea that Hitler didn't go into Switzerland because
every single citizen had a gun and was part of the army.
That's true, isn't it?
And they had a handful of choke points, of course, those mountain passes.
That's what Richard Mayberry argues anyway in his book.
Oh, his general said,
"Look, World War II, the rest of the story. We're not going in there, dude."
I don't care how much money's there, man. Let's just stay out here, okay? There's plenty out here we can deal with.
Yeah, because see, they knew the terrain, according to Mayberry. They knew the nooks and crannies, and they all had a weapon, and they knew how to use it.
Had a gun.
Could you imagine?
And you had to know how to use it.
You know, like trying to invade Dripping Springs with all these valleys and hills, and everybody's got a weapon that they knew how to use. And how would you? Who would win?
A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state.
All right, you keep saying this comma
like
thing.
Like Switzerland.
What is this comma thing?
Well, the comma is very important.
Well, that's, I know you always mention the comma.
Because the beginning. Phrase there.
Yeah. A well-regulated.
Is a statement.
A well-regulated militia.
Being necessary.
Comma, being necessary?
Yeah, being necessary to the security of a free state.
Yeah.
So that's just a
is there another comma there?
There is, yeah.
Oh, so a well-regulated militia is a statement because there's a comma after it.
Correct.
And then being necessary for blah, blah, there's a comma after that.
To the security of a free state.
And then what comes after
that? So that's kind of that's your opening theme. A well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state. So why wouldn't the Germans invade Switzerland? Because the militia, every single person in the country who isn't in the army, right, well-regulated, yeah. They had, everybody had a weapon. Everybody knew how to use it. They weren't just token members of the army. They knew how to use their weapon, and they had it with a bullet. So everybody now is part of the defense of the nation.
And that holds true for today.
Yes.
In Switzerland,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh. In Switzerland, in Dripping Springs. If everybody in Dripping Springs is part of the security force, the militia,
yeah.
And everybody has a firearm and is ready to use it, nobody's coming to Dripping Springs and taking it.
Well, I'd bet the farm that 90% of the people out in Dripping Springs have firearms.
Have a firearm, know how to use it. Well, you can't say that in New York City. You can't say that in
Chicago.
Well,
no, you guys can't have guns and big sodas there because...
They're not allowed. Mayor Bloomberg says they're not safe.
You can have big drinks and guns in there? Nah, you're gonna...
Well, you can have a big drink, but you have to wear a helmet.
That's...
I think. No, wait, that's...
That's when you're driving. Or if you've got a bicycle and a big drink.
Right, that's it. Yeah, that's
these,
it.
These libs, boy. You just can't make this stuff. Hey, what is this about this this law? What is the name of this thing? This thing, the word about this concealed carry thing going around? What's... You must be following this, right? Isn't there a bill that's trying to get through? And it's a kind of a strange name that doesn't sound like it fits. But
well, it has to do with this. You have a driver's license in Texas,
correct?
Right?
And you can drive in
and
Montana.
If you drive out of Texas, then the state of Montana has to recognize Texas's driver's license,
right? This is
but not the carry permit.
They're trying to pass this for the carry permit.
Right.
Did you see that?
Well, it's not trying to pass it. What it is what's good for the goose is good for the gander. You know, the idea that you'll trust my state to regulate driving privileges.
Right.
But yet, just because I have an open carry permit in Texas, I can't use that in Montana.
Wow.
That, you know, the Constitution provides for this sort of...
it does?
What do they call that? Reciprocality. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
You're supposed to...
There's a name that they're putting on this thing. So people are trying to put that through just to make sure that people can do that.
It's amazing that they have to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing that they even have to do it. The Second Amendment is so clear to me, and the reason I do the comma thing is because the other side wants to say, oh, yeah, but they're referring to the army there. That's
when
the
you
army.
Say well-regulated militia.
Oh,
blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah,
they're
blah,
talking
blah.
About the army. And we say, of course, the army should have guns, but not the people. That's what the forefathers
so
intended.
So the militia
Are
is different
from... Are you kidding me?
Militia is different from the army, correct?
It is.
Okay.
It's every able-bodied male, 17 to 45, not otherwise conscripted. That's the definition, Black's Law Dictionary, 6th edition, of a militia man.
Look at the big brain on Andy.
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry.
I think it's great you know this.
Don't get me started.
I think it's great
you know
God, this
gold, and guns. And so the idea that you would have your gold and silver coins in your physical possession, that's your wealth, and then you would have the means to defend it against those that might take it from you, you see how the forefathers would have put all that together. Understand that they were, the main thing that they were... fighting against was British oppression, and the main British oppression was forbidding the use of state-issued money. And, you know, this was what made the colonies prosper, the idea that the people, through their representatives, would issue money that bore no interest, that no one got rich from.
Yeah.
That was the offensive thing.
That's the deal
that we did as a nation, and the Townsend Acts, of course, forbade the issuance of money in the colonies and forced us to use the Bank of England's money, which was already under the control of the wealthy banking families of Europe. So for them, this was just one big bounty, and it didn't matter who won, whether the revolution was successful or not. They were going to control the money no matter who won. And that was what they saw. And I believe, I mean, I'm making a case, it's taken me 40 years, that the banking families of Europe financed, do you believe this? Financed the revolution. Wouldn't that be, I'm digging for proof. I want the hard proof. But circumstantially, you can see it, that they funded the underground. They funded them. Like, go ahead, send
the dudes over here.
Yes. Yeah. Don't, no. It, the Americans.
They funded. Oh, they funded. Wait a minute. They funded the usins.
Yes.
Us childrens. Why would they do that?
Well, because they believed that through Alexander Hamilton and others that they had planted in the early revolution, that they could take control of the British money supply, of the American money supply from the Bank of England, that was what the Townsend Acts were all about. They were all about the Bank of England rules the United States as far as money is concerned.
All right, so these are banking people other than the Bank of England.
Correct.
You're trying to make the case that they funded
the independent bankers who grew, who coveted that power to create money.
Man.
Did so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's next documentary.
That's right, next documentary. I got a lot of feature films to write here, kid.
Sure,
man,
I hear you.
Oh, man. Yeah. Isn't it?
There's nothing new except the history we don't know. So
coming
down through these 250-odd years here, here we are as supposedly free citizens on this great land of ours in the United States, but yet our money is a slave. We might be free, but our money was enslaved. It took them a while to do it, but they've done it. And if you study the history, you'll realize that everything you think is money really isn't. It's something else.
Well, I think it's Bitcoin, really. I think. Well, wait, I just got some good Bitcoin stories for you. But I have a lot of things to go. We're going to have so much fun this morning. So stay right there. Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, One Radio Network. So you got to get in on here and get in on this conversation because, I mean, it doesn't get any funner than this. I mean, you're not going to have this much fun at Grandma's house for Christmas talking about, you might.
Hi, my name is Stephen Holstein. In my 20s, I abused stimulants and anabolic steroids to the point where my adrenal glands were shot. I suffered from extreme fatigue and an inability to handle stress. For over 6 years, I had been taking adrenal supplements including herbs, glandulars, vitamin C, and vitamin B5. All these supplements did was treat the symptoms and produce only minimal results. Now, just after 1 month on Synergy One and ADR Medics, I truly feel rejuvenated. I have never felt such relaxation before from any adrenal supplement as I did just 10 minutes after taking ADR Medics. I then noticed Synergy One made me wake up rested and with much more energy. No more hungover, groggy feeling upon arising. I had almost considered going to another country for stem cell therapy as a last resort, but now I truly feel rejuvenated on Synergy One and ADR Medics.
Success happens with synergistic nutrition. Click on the One World Way banner ad right here on OneRadioNetwork.com. That's OneRadioNetwork.com.
Previously, Dr. Richard Massey talks about colostrum.
When you get certain vaccines, you get leaky gut from it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, we're all born with leaky gut, big holes in our gut, but there's no poop in there because we haven't been eating in the womb, right? And so nature's vaccination program is to get mama's colostrum, which has all the immune factors in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the gut is wide open. It's got leaks in it. So this colostrum can come through like an injection. When it does, the leaky gut closes.
So that's why the colostrum we take helps seal the gut.
It seals the leaky gut. But people who are vaccinated tend to have chronic leaky gut because the gut is waiting for the real thing. So people's guts are open like, hey, when is the real stuff coming in?
Can the cow stuff do it?
The cow stuff does it as well.
Oh, it does.
So you put those immune factors in with colostrum before eating meals. Mm-hmm. It goes in. It's nature's vaccination program. It closes the leaky gut. Then your autoimmune stuff goes down. Your food allergies go down. Wonderful stuff happens.
Thanks, Doc. We love this product. Colostrum, lots of different sizes to choose from. It's a great product. Click and order colostrum. Any of the Surthrival links, it's right here on OneRadioNetwork.com. You know, I got a little behind because I jump on the rebounder. I say every time I think about, I get a little behind. But I am a little behind on sulfur ordering. Why this been silly piriformis thing been going? But it's coming around, and so it's kind of put me in the weeds here. So anyway, the point of what I'm trying to say, and I'll get to it if I quit talking, is. It's amazing how I can do that. Just if you'd like to order some sulfur, we're going to place an order at noon today, right after the show. So you can just get a sulfur order in and then you'll have it by the end of the week. Yeah, you probably have it by Saturday or something like that. So just you can click an order on the front page of One Radio Network. That's a really one wonderful, fun, pure sulfur that people really like a lot, and all kinds of benefits, the least of which is it has a love affair with heavy metals, if I can borrow a saying from one of our past guests, and that's a cool thing. Lots of oxygen everywhere. You'll remember more of your dreams, and you just kind of brightens your little brain. It just kind of goes boop. And we all could use a brain brightener from time to time with all the strange things going on. So if you'd like to order some sulfur, click and order front page. If you want more than 4 pounds, email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, okay?
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on oneradionetwork.com. Good morning. This is oneradionetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
Okay, it's the Real World of Money for December 6, 2017. And this is the Real World of Money with Andrew Goss, currency historian. And so we should mention two things that you have taught us over the years that when you talk about these kind of false flags and how the people involved with making the decisions are also the people that understand money, probably, right? And they have a big interest in money. Because you've taught us that when George 43 and his peeps came up with the idea that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Remember that one? Colin Powell at the UN with his charts, Netanyahu at the UN with a big bomb on a whiteboard. Oh, you know, they got a bomb. And, you know, everybody believed him. And whoops, there was no. And you suggested that from day one, we do know that the dinar at the time was $3.42, right?
Yeah.
And they go in there, and you said that they took over the Central Bank of Iraq, J.P. That's Morgan, right? They established, if I remember, they established the Iraqi Oil
Trust.
Yeah. So all the oil sales
revenue
went into the trust, and J.P. Morgan, go figure.
Bank of New York Mellon.
And these people, how did they get the authority to actually take over Iraq's oil?
We gave it to them.
Who's we?
We, the government of the United States of America.
The ones that went in and the ones that went in there to get the weapons of mass destruction that weren't there?
Correct.
And who
called upon the banks to do their patriotic duty and take over the central banking system.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, that's it.
Good
they helped.
For them.
They were very helpful.
Very helpful. Very helpful. I suspect they're in there today, wouldn't you think?
Yes.
I don't think they'd ever left there, really.
No.
Really?
They wrote the charter. They put together the whole deal. So
The
same with our charter. They wrote it in such a way that the people that had control at the beginning maintained control right to the end.
Oh, you mean the boys from Jekyll Island and that?
That Jekyll thing. Island was the final incarnation. Yeah. You realize, I mean, that is not the first attempt at a central bank in the United States.
No,
it was
no.
the third.
The third, right?
The third successful attempt.
First was 93?
Yeah, first one, 1792, with a 20-year charter, ran out in 1812.
Whoops.
Major war broke out, and then we signed a new treaty in 1814, and it stayed till the age of Andrew Jackson, who killed that bank, man. Killed the second bank of the United States, and then, it was only then, that we saw that real period of economic growth, unprecedented economic growth in the United States.
So that brings me to, I wanted to bring up, your favorite subject, and that is cryptocurrencies.
Now,
not a day goes by when I don't get an email from somebody saying, hey, listen, you need to buy this cryptocurrency because it's going to go up 453%. See, read this article by January 1st, and it's, you know, whatever, crypto dune or something, who knows. There's about 1,000 of them out there. Of course.
There are 1,000.
And the leading one, of
with
course.
With a total is market value of 350 billion dollars.
That's
today.
Not a lot, really.
A lot? That's not. That's a rounding error at a central bank. But central banks are worried.
It's a rounding error.
They are worried. I mean, to suggest that they're not.
That's what I was going to kind of go.
Yeah, they
Bitcoin
are.
Bitcoin is $12,500 today. I mean, that's crazy.
But and see, they can't print more. They, the central banks,
in theory,
can't print in Bitcoin
if they stick to their 21 million. But here's what I wanted to say is that so the crypto guys, I get where they're going, and they think that the cryptocurrencies are going to overtake the dollar, and this is it's going to all be better someday.
Yeah, and the central banks are going to go out of business.
Well, see, and this is my argument to them. You've got to go back all the way back to 1793. What these will do to defend the dollar, to defend their stake in the dollar.
To defend their franchise,
their franchise after 250 years.
They don't issue Bitcoin.
Right. Yeah. Do you think that they're just going to sit around?
Right.
This is my argument to
people.
You think they're just going to sit around and watch cryptocurrencies just take everything over and just walk away and say, oh, no, well, you know, the last 250, 100 years, nah, it didn't matter. We're done.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I clipped this
week.
See,
that's just what I tell people, and they just, you know.
I clipped three good articles so far this week out of the Wall Street Journal about Bitcoin. The first one, Bitcoin futures trading starts next week.
That's right. I got an email about that this
morning.
And
the next one, traders beware.
So you ask Andy about that, because this emailer says, well, this is going to be big. Come on. Bitcoin's going to go up, because they're going to, so you're going to be able to buy Bitcoin on the FX, or what's the deal? What is that about? What is it about?
You'll be able to trade Bitcoin futures.
Oh, I wonder what that's going to do to it. No, really. What is it going to do? Because I don't understand.
Well, it's going to give people who doubt Bitcoin's ability to move forward
like
the
me?
Ability to short it.
Oh. So I'm
in
gonna,
massive
I'm going to be able
numbers.
To sell Bitcoin short?
Correct.
And how would
and
I do?
And you'll be able to go long.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of longies, too.
Yeah. Right? Just go to the CME group, which is, you know, Chicago Mercantile Exchange.
Just do a Bitcoin
and,
thing, huh?
And you'll just buy Bitcoin futures.
So in other words, you would do it similar to what people buy gold, oil, and silver futures?
Yeah.
Same thing? Where you can buy
exactly the same.
10,000 ounces of gold or whatever. What's a silver contract, 10,000 ounces?
Whatever it is.
Yeah. 1,000,
I don't
whatever.
Buy them.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But you can buy those and just and bet it's going to go up. And if it goes up, you make money, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So one thing that is attractive about Bitcoin, right, is that there are only 21 million.
So far, right?
So, well, there can only be 21 million Bitcoins.
Correct.
That's the overarching thing.
I mean, that's the overarching
so
thing.
So to people like me, you view that as, okay, that's like a gold standard.
Well, of course.
But like a gold standard, central banks can't print Bitcoins. They can't create more of them. And that doesn't put them in a happy position.
Well, doesn't that make their Bitcoins more valuable because they're limited supply?
Let me say this again.
Okay.
The central banks can't print them. They would, in effect, be an honest money system, wouldn't they? There can only be 21 million.
Well, that's
so the fundamentals of Bitcoin are good.
That's what the geeks are arguing.
That's right. The fundamentals are good. The regulators are just not going to sit on the sidelines and say, hey, you guys go ahead and take our lunch.
So you're talking about the central banks, the boys, the IMF, the World Bank, the Bank of whatever, Bank of Japan, the bank, whatever, everybody, the boys.
That good article on Monday was Digital Currency Fever May Hit the Fed. That was in the A2 section of the Wall Street Journal on Monday.
What are they saying there?
Well, they're saying essentially that the underlying technology is so good that the central banks are going to get involved. And I can understand that.
Well, of course they will. They're going to probably do crypto dollars, right? Cryptocurrency
dollars. They love the platform.
So what's wrong with that?
They love the platform.
That's not going to hurt Bitcoin.
Okay.
No, why would it hurt? And seriously, why would it hurt Bitcoin?
Regulation.
Okay, so give me an idea. What are you saying here?
Consumer protection. Oh, so first we start calling, cryptos cash, and then we treat them like cash.
Okay.
So that's the first thing.
Yeah, which they can do in a heartbeat, right? With just one bill.
Yeah, just pass one bill.
Okay, so what would that do?
That would take out all of the money launderers and the criminal element in Bitcoin.
Well, why? Because people launder dollars every day.
Wow, man, where have I been for 10 years? Patrick, cash, there's a war on cash. Have you heard?
Yeah, there is hardly any left,
Right. If you take cash and start walking around with cash in your pocket, you go to the car dealer, try to buy a car for cash.
So what you're saying is I missed that point. You're saying that they would make up the idea that Bitcoin is cash.
Correct.
C-A-S-H.
Yeah.
Then it would have all the provisions of cash.
Everything, every rule they've put in place for cash money.
So if you've
got
Bitcoins in your trunk, they can confiscate them?
That's right. There you go.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to understand what you're saying.
If you conduct a Bitcoin transaction and don't report it, yeah.
Of course. Well, I mean, that's the big one. You know that's coming.
Yeah.
You know that's coming. Right. So they could just make it illegal to buy and sell without letting the government know.
Well, okay, they could outlaw Bitcoin. Say, okay, Bitcoin is outlawed, straight up.
Yeah, but that's not going to stop anybody, right?
I don't know that would have the desired effect. But they can
it would stop me if it's illegal.
You can go ahead and use that if you want. Just treat it like cash. So banking institutions, barter exchanges, you know, the guys that run these exchanges are the ones that are going to be the root of the problem here, not the Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. It's the people that run the Bitcoin exchanges. They're going to be the ones that create the issue here, not the actual Bitcoin itself. Mm-hmm. But the idea that there is no central bank that issues or supports the market in Bitcoin, that, you know, double-edged sword. The thing that makes it attractive is also the thing that makes it unattractive. As I said many times before when we were talking about these things, you want to gamble, go ahead. But as a long-term place to store your wealth and forget about it, not something I could recommend with a good conscience.
Right. Here's a big, big mucky-muck in China yesterday. Mm-hmm. If we had not shut down Bitcoin exchanges and cracked down on ICO several months ago, if China still accounted for more than 80% of the world's Bitcoin trading and ICO fundraising, everyone, what would happen today?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So China's not going to... This guy says that Bitcoin will die of grand theft, that a hack into the blockchain technology behind the cryptos, which is actually unlikely, probably, but he's, you know, of course, this is just one of the boys, or a collective ban by global governments. So a collective ban by global governments would allow the crypto maniacs to continue, but maybe what they're doing could be like a sick bird, illegal, like being an illegal guy, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would stop me. I mean, if they could arrest you or something... for using them? Could they get to that point, do you think?
Depends which country you're in. Yeah. In the United States, if in the U.S. we pass that Senate bill that treats cryptocurrencies like
as cash, you know, yeah.
Then you have, we've seen what happens to people when they, right?
Yeah.
When they conduct their affairs in cash, they're branded money launderers, they're... They're prosecuted and their stuff is taken.
So what you're saying is there may be a little bit of money to be made if you're really gambling today next week or gamble away. But to sit there and put kabillions
in
there.
To store your long-term wealth, I see the kind of confidence that I have with my old coins. I don't think will ever be replaced by any other financial element.
If you've got a coin and if you got something in your possession and there's no middle guy,
That's right.
No piece of paper, I don't care
what happens outside.
You can't get much better than that.
Outside forces, no.
No, you can't get much better than that.
And that's why I buy and sell American gold and silver coins, because that's the protection that we were given under the Constitution, and I'm unwilling to give it up. Yeah. I'm just not willing.
So what's the likelihood of...
Oh, I'm a Luddite. Yes,
we love would say, as they did in 1933, hey guys, you can't hold gold and silver and bring it on in, and we're going to give you $20 an ounce. By the way, we are going to change the value to $35 next month, but we're not telling you. What's the chances that Andrew Goss, that would ever happen with coins?
Zero.
Because?
Well, because they would have to admit that whole basis of the country is null and void, the Constitution of the United States.
Oh, so I see. Oh. Mm-hmm.
I mean, hey, convince people the way that we have today that, Congress shall have the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. clearly unconstitutional money is what we're using, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way that it gets through the legal fiction is that at law, there's no difference between a $20 bill and a $20 gold piece.
That's the only way this fiat Federal Reserve note has the legs that it has. Right?
That's right. Yeah, it's constitutional in that, well,
so
they're the same thing. They're the same thing. A silver dollar and a paper dollar, they're the same thing. That's the legal fiction. Now, if you're going to strip away the ownership and possession of the first type, ugly, ugly, ugly.
Not going to work.
Not going to work. Well, it would require just go ahead and void the Constitution and start again. Then, I guess, anything is possible.
Sure.
But under our current system, our current framework, the root of it all are the gold and silver coins that were minted by the Treasury. They're sort of the Bitcoin, if you will.
Yeah.
And they issued all that they were going to issue, and they're out in circulation, and everything else is a representation of that. So with over $25 trillion in money and maybe $400 billion, maybe $500 billion in numismatic coins or minted coins, you could see that the cover rate is pretty it's pretty wide there, buddy. I mean, it's got to be, I don't know, 100,000 to 1. I'd have to break out the calculator.
Yeah. I just want to backtrack just a second just to clear up this. Representative Thomas Massie, Repub, from Kentucky, saying that the House leadership plans to merge Obama-style gun control with national reciprocity. That's what it is. That's the law. Reciprocity, concealed carry. Representative Richard Hudson, he's a Repub from North Carolina. He's introducing reciprocity, H.R. 38, to the House floor soon, which is saying if you have a concealed carry in Texas, you can go wherever you want and still have it, kind of thing.
Yep. Reciprocity.
That word. Yeah, reciprocity. 888-663-6386, email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Well, Mr. Gosch, you predicted there wasn't going to be any kind of thing going on with the tax reform thing, but you could be wrong. They might get this thing done by the end of the year.
Yeah, in 5 days.
You don't think so?
Okay. I don't. We'll wait and see.
So
anything's possible.
So let's talk a little bit about, I thought it'd be interesting to bring up the corporation idea today just a little bit and give folks your opinion on that. Is there something here if the corporate rate goes down to 20? It's probably going to end up a little bit higher in the 23, 25, isn't it, after they get done arguing about it? Anyway, so let's say it ends up at, say, 23%. Yeah. How can our listeners use that for maybe a business? A lot of people have their own businesses. Can they utilize this to save them taxes in 2018?
I haven't seen. I can't.
Let's just say they lower the corporate rate to 23 or 20.
On the pass-throughs?
On the pass-throughs.
It would mean
that'd be huge,
that the owner of a small business would stop taking salary and start taking dividends, taking other than Social Security taxable income. That's probably going to be the net result.
So that would be what kind of a structure, an LLC or something like
LLCs
that?
Or S-Corps, so-called
pass-through entities. So you put everything in your little corporation, right?
Yeah.
Say you were whatever you did. Say you're an art, say you sold paintings or something like that, right?
Correct.
Okay, so you have corporation pays for the place where you paint and the paint and your car if you go out and sell them, all that stuff, taxes.
Right.
So you have all your expenses, right?
Yeah.
Then what happens? How do you pay yourself?
Well, you either pay yourself in W-2 wages.
Right.
On which you pay a payroll tax plus your income tax.
15% total.
Or you pay yourself as the owner of the company.
And how do you do that?
Because you're not getting wages. You're just getting money for being the owner of a company.
Oh, you could say, I'm going to give myself 50 grand and that's it.
I'm going to give the shareholders 50 grand and that's it.
And you don't pay payroll taxes on that?
No, it's not income.
Whoa. Well, that would be a bonus, wouldn't it, if you could do
it? It might very well be.
But then when you...
But we have to... Patrick, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
These reconciliations between the House and Senate bill all are aimed at doing the same thing. and that is keeping the revenue tables relatively neutral. Already, this president's caught enormous flack for ballooning the deficit. So by cutting taxes, he's going to increase the deficit and therefore the national debt.
Well, they're arguing that he's going to increase the deficit $1.5 trillion over 10 years. Obama
per year.
Increased it. No, over 10 years.
No, $1.5 trillion, forgive me, per year for 10 years.
Well, that's not what I, really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah. President Obama did a trillion something.
Yeah,
over every
yeah
year,
I mean,
right?
Listen, if he only does that, that'd be great. Somebody needs to point out every single president since Clinton has doubled the national debt, since Reagan.
Well, I must have misread that. I thought it was 1.5 over 10. So they're arguing, the CBO and all that, it's going to be 1.5 per year.
Oh, yeah.
This tax cut, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. More like $10 trillion over 10 years.
1.5 over the one that they're already going to be over?
Yeah.
So he'd be in the black $2 trillion a year?
Remains to be seen.
Okay.
I have not, until that bill is finally reconciled between the House version and the Senate.
Which is what they're doing now, right?
That's right. Where they're going to say, okay, you can deduct this much in local property taxes.
I think there's going to be a cap on that, right?
May very well be. Exactly. So until all of these things are reconciled, these are going to be the tax rates for individuals, and these are going to be the deductions for individuals. Then, when all that is inked to the paper, then business owners across America will meet with their accountants and say, okay, what does the new tax code mean for me? Well, it means you want to increase your payroll or you want to decrease your payroll. That's what it's going to mean. You want to switch from an S-corp to a C-corp because the C-corps get better treatment. We don't know. And until this final version is put to the American people, we have no idea. I will point out, however, that the Constitution says specifically that all bills for revenue taxation should emit from the House, not the Senate. And I just find it curious that the House bill sent over to the Senate, now the Senate modifies it to where it's unrecognizable. It's as though the Senate started this tax bill, not the House.
Which is kind of not constitutional.
It's unconstitutional.
Of course, when's the last time that piece of paper mattered to these people?
Yeah,
anyway,
who cares, right?
Yeah, who cares, man?
At the end of the day, they're going to tax you what they feel like taxing you.
Yeah.
It's like the old plantation system, you know. You get your slave badge, you go out and you ply your trade, and then when you're done, you bring your money back, you set it on the table, and the master decides how much of it you get to keep.
Uh-huh.
That's the system
that we have. So we'll just keep an eye on it. And if there is, if there's something that people that are sole proprietors out there,
there might be
something that they could do
as soon as it comes out. And I will make it my business to know.
And somebody might be able to save themselves some money.
Speaking of tax treatment. So in 1996, you bought a $17.95 $10 gold piece. You paid $7,000 for it.
I remember
Fill in the blank.
Where is that coin? I can't find it.
Fill in the blank. It could be a Mustang. It could be a couch. It could be a piece of furniture.
Anything, could be a painting, right? An old car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you bought it in 1996, and it's appreciated in value. And now, 20 years later, it's worth $26,000.
Good for me.
Right?
Yeah.
Great for you.
Yeah.
It's a passive income generator.
Yes.
Until you actually sell it, you don't pay any tax.
Oh, I see. So the guy, the one we love, can't knock on your door and say, hey, you know that car you have in your driveway?
Garage.
That dude is worth $30,000, and you only paid five. That's not true.
That's not going to happen.
No, only when I sell it, you'll get your share.
That's right. So to protect your assets, what you need to focus on
like
are passive.
Protecting your assets? Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Protecting where your assets. So these passive income generators, they're going to be all the rage moving forward. Because you could bet that every year, your check that you get from your bonds or from your stocks that you sold or what have you.
Uh-huh.
Those are all going to be taxed to the hilt, I would bet.
Oh, you mean what really is income, according to the
truly,
Supreme Court.
Yes.
Truly income,
that's
which is
right.
Profits severed from capital.
From capital.
Yes.
Will be
I've
taxed
been listening
like there's
to you.
No tomorrow.
That's true that's income. Right. You know, everything else.
True income.
Kind of
yeah.
that sort of income. Okay, so that's going to be taxed.
Heavily.
So that,
and passive income generators
that's
going to
affect
become,
your business in a way then, right? People buying.
Well, only in the sense that the more they tax, the better it is for us. Because
for,
we are the ultimate passive income generator. If you, you know, if you want to put something aside for the kids and
oh, I
never
see
have to,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
nothing better. Intergenerational transfer,
sure.
nah, nothing. There's nothing better. And anything like this will benefit from this tax code, the modified tax code. Any passive income generator will benefit.
Well, I don't know. I just heard you say the taxes on passive income when you sell it's going to be higher, so I lost you.
Help well, here. It's only when you sell it.
Okay, it's only when
it's
you sell
it. It's the only
it.
Time.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do you need to sell it?
But if your kid sells your coin 20 years from now, he's going to be, well, who cares, right?
Well, that's between now. The kid and the IRS and what he whatever the kid has to do or decides to do.
Right, okay, I got you.
For
got
our purposes, you. We bought it with after-tax money. We put it aside,
mm-hmm.
and it's been growing every year.
Yeah.
And that growth has been tax-free.
Got you.
It's not chunked every single year.
Got you. So. And it's relatively easy to pass on a nice, say, really expensive coin to your kid. And
well, just like passing on a piece of furniture.
Same thing.
You know, when you're,
yeah.
Yeah, when you, when
you just
estate,
put it in your
you
will,
know,
and that's
your,
what it is.
Your
huh?
personal property in yeah. your estate
yeah.
is separate from your real property. And your investment
personal
property.
And real.
Yeah.
Personal would be your couch, your car, a coin.
Your car, yeah.
Whatever. Your juicer.
Whatever's in the underwear, sock drawer.
Yeah,
yeah exactly.
Would it be
jewelry.
Your juicer and everything? Your juicer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
your juicer.
Okay.
Your sauna. Your infrared sauna.
That's your personal property.
Correct.
And you can just pass that on to George who lives in Omaha.
Pretty much,
say,
yeah.
God
yeah.
love you, George. It's all yours.
Yeah, it's all yours. Take my personal property.
Now, does George have to pay taxes on
property.
That? Or does the state get involved with that when you do that?
No.
Okay.
No.
They don't?
No. What they do get involved with is your real property.
Which is things
your
like...
Your real estate.
Yeah.
Real estate. your real,
real oh,
estate.
Okay, I get it. What else?
Your real estate.
your
real
stocks,
estate,
your bonds.
Your stocks, your bonds. That's right. That's
I
right.
See.
Those...
So they
those
take a cut.
Of,
they take a cut out of that.
They're definitely going to get a chunk of that, of, according to what the structure is. They call it the death tax.
The death
but
tax. Aren't they
you
trying
know,
to get rid of that thing? The death tax.
I think they are. Who knows? Again, what it's going to come out of.
Mm-hmm. So today, if you cross over the line or move on to greener pastures, kind of a surprise event, and you don't have things in place. Or even if you do, the gov, they got their little fingers in there right now getting some stuff, right? They get a percentage.
Are you talking about if you die intestate, like without a will?
Oh, well, that's for sure.
You don't want to do that
that's
under
just
any
not
circumstances.
Good. Not good.
Yeah.
That's a
right.
real mess, right?
Right.
Then you're liable to lose
but a will
it all.
That says,
George,
there's a box
says,
in my safe that yeah. belongs to my son, Joe, and it's in here for safekeeping.
It's his.
Then the box in the safe goes to Joe.
Yeah, that's all.
That's it.
And it's got Joe on the label, right?
Yeah, I've been holding it for Joe in my safe for lo these many years, and now I've left the earth, so I can't hold it in my safe anymore. I'm going to have to give it back to Joe.
Okay.
So here you go, Joe. Here's your box of property.
Okay.
And that's essentially how that transfer occurs.
Without anybody else getting involved. It's just, here you go,
well,
Joe. That's yours.
No one else is involved. It's you, and you're holding Joe's property.
Yeah, but when's the last time the government let you do anything without getting involved?
Well, this is true. This is one of the last bastions.
This is what
of,
they do for a living,
yeah,
you know.
Free enterprise. And, right, exactly.
That's
exactly.
what they do for a living.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, you know, given deaths that I've witnessed, siblings and kids historically have benefited greatly from having their coins as part of the collection.
Oh, yeah.
Part of these. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because even if there was a value put to them, You argue that it is just the value that was they paid for them.
Well, but more important in terms of liquidity,
yeah.
if you've ever handled a death, you know, there's, okay, well, we can't sell the house because it's got to go through probate. And then, you know, title's got to pass to the new person. before anything can be done in terms of liquidity. Same with life insurance proceeds. Sometimes 30, 60, 90 days later, you're getting the money.
I see.
With coins, man, you got it right away.
That's all right. We like sirens. It gives you it gives a nice ambiance to the Real World of Money show.
What good is a mute button if you can't use it?
I know. I love it, boy. You got a lot of sirens around there.
Yeah, we're right here on the Sea Pine Circle, for those of you who know South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if you're Hilton Head, rather, if you go anywhere on Hilton Head, you have to go through the Sea Pine Circle. Uh-huh. I don't care who you are. So whether you're an ambulance or a person going to the beach, you're driving around the Sea Pine Circle. And that's right where we have our office, right in the Sea Pine Circle. So it it overlooks this wonderful circle. We get to see people from all over the country coming to enjoy lovely Hilton Head and its beaches.
Yeah, yeah. If you see Tiger Woods, going to go plug off there, say hi. Andrew Goss, yeah. Patrick Timpone, we have been recommending things like Living Libations, beautiful website to give some gifts. Also, shopping through Amazon for Christmas is really cool. But Andrew, I've been thinking, what could you offer to our listeners of a gift for a grandchild?
Oh, yeah, we've been cranking them out.
Yeah. I mean, you got plenty of time for that, right? Give us some ideas what they might get for a gift. That'd be fun.
Well, our clients in the know have already been making those inquiries, and every year we put stocking stuffers around. So we have stocking stuffers this year that are really cool.
Yeah.
Old silver dollars.
Yeah.
For Billy the Kid, 1880s, the San Francisco Mint.
Oh.
In 63 grade, there may be $75 and 64 grade, not much more.
That'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Right? And at the lower end, we have the modern silver dollars, Statue of Liberty, Constitution, and others, $20 or so. No great shape.
You could figure out a cool way to package those up, too, for the kids.
Original
like
government packaging is cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But having them loose is sometimes good, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, as bottom line, it depends how big your stocking is. I got a great stocking stuffer.
How big a stuffing you got, dude?
Yeah, so if you have a nice tiny little stocking, just a typical average stocking, and you want to put, let's see what we have today, $725,000 coin, you can put right in that stocking.
You actually have a coin for $725,000?
Yeah, single coin today for $725,000.
What's that coin? What's that one?
It's rare.
You think?
Pointless to...
But I'm kind of curious what it is, just for fun.
Well, aren't we all? Yeah, it's a proof gold coin from the 1870s.
Yeah.
1876, to be precise.
1876, I remember that.
$3 gold piece.
And why on earth would it be worth $725,000?
Because they only made 45 of them.
And you got one.
And I have the second finest known of 45. So whoever's got the best one, they would probably tell you it's $1 million coin.
Really?
But mine's second best, so what are you going to do?
Well, if my Uncle Tony were around, he'd buy that for me for my stock.
Well, that is the point. Somebody
of course,
paid
I don't know where the money came from, but that's just...
we don't care. $450 million for a Leonardo painting.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
Right? So, I mean, this thing is cheap compared to that. Yeah.
So what if somebody had...
And you can't fit that in your stocking.
No. What if somebody... Yeah. What if somebody had even, say, a couple grand and they were going to get really a big present? They could find a nice coin for that, too, for
a child, yeah, the $20 St. Gaudens or the $20 Liberty.
Wow.
I think we have $20 Liberty coins in high mint state, like 63 grade for $1,700 or
so. And you could also, I'm thinking you could give a red book, too.
Always.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Always. Anytime you get a coin...
Give
them
a red book.
You don't have a red book, you get a red book.
And you
book,
sell the red books too, or you give them away or something?
We do, but we give them away. I mean, I literally give hundreds away every year.
Yeah, really?
You cannot buy and sell coins without a red book. It's just, you should have
one. You just got to have a red book.
Yeah.
So if somebody would like to talk to you, one would be, I guess, for Christmas stocking stuffer. How long does it take for you all to get something out?
Oh, you want to do it now, folks. I was talking to the UPS man who said that the depot is already packed to the ceiling with boxes. So I wouldn't wait too long if you want this for Christmas.
Sure.
We count. You remember last year we switched from the United States Postal Service to Federal Express?
I remember.
Best thing we ever did.
Really?
I mean, after 30 years, it's sad to say. But...
Yeah, they rock and roll, boy, FedEx.
They do.
They rock and roll. I've seen these guys pull up in my driveway on Sunday to give me a little thing that I ordered on Friday from Amazon.
Right.
I mean, go
they
figure.
Work. These, yeah, they work.
It's amazing.
They work. They do. And so I'm very confident that if you order within the next 2 weeks, they'll get it to you, you know, right on time.
Sure.
But I would say if you wait past the 18th or the 20th, you do so at your own risk. I have great confidence in Federal Express. However, don't know that they'll be able to get the package on time.
I saw an article where they're wanting the UPS guys and girls to work 90-hour weeks, and they're holding their breath there, maybe go on strike. What a mess that would be. But I don't.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, don't even
that?
Say it.
No, UPS.
Yeah.
UPS.
Yeah.
Okay. So if folks would like to call you for a gift or for just spending some of this time thinking about getting into gold and silver coins as an investment,
yeah,
be a good time.
Well, yeah, it's the end of the year.
Because they're at home more, they have some time off, and they can study more about it. How would they reach you?
Well, 800-468-2646. Maybe your business has a tax liability because you've accumulated too much capital this year. You know, businesses can buy gold coins as well.
Oh.
So talk to your accountant about it and give us a call. 800-468-2646.
So
mention One Radio Network.
That's a legal way to shelter a little bit of income.
Talk to your accountant about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't give you tax advice, but I just say companies can most certainly buy coins. They do it all the time.
I go to a guy named Louis. He's got this little visor on. I don't know if he'd be the right guy. Hey, Louis, what do you think? Oh, sure, sure. You can do that.
Yeah, never buy your rare coins out of a raincoat. That's one of our first rules.
Out of a raincoat. That's precious.
Yeah, no, you should know your coin dealer. You really should. And, you know, somebody that's been in business a while is generally knows what the heck they're doing.
Yeah.
So you can't stay in business in this business without doing a good job. I mean, you just can't do it.
Yeah. Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone. Andrew's number is 800-468-2646. A lot of things to talk about this morning. Stick around. Come on in and join us. We're going to get to some of all of your emails. Patrick@oneradionetwork.com. And we're going to, this is a kind of a neat idea for the holidays for your significant other and you to think about. We're with Daniel Vitalis of Sir Thrival. New product, Taboo. Can I guess what that's about?
Yeah, Taboo is our first aphrodisiac elixir. I like to think of it as a chocolate liqueur. Not only rich in chocolate and vanilla and maple, but all of these different herbs which help seduce the senses and help to plump up erectile tissue in the body. There are standardized extracts of epimedium. You've probably heard of that, called horny goatweed. And then ashwagandha as well. But there's also more apama, tribulus, maca, and a good dose of elk antler in there as well. Now, the idea is that it works in the short term to enhance libido and enhance the engorgement of erectile tissue, both in men and women. But it also works long term, optimizing your sex hormones to increase libido in the long game as well.
Well, that sounds fun, doesn't it? Why not get one for her and one for him? It does sound fun, doesn't it? But be careful. We are trying to do our part here at One Radio Network to get the birth rate up a little bit. I mean, the fertility rates of boys and girls is just really going downhill. So we're trying to do our part and get more taxpayers out there so you can get your taxes lowered. So be careful if you're going to use this. And so here's physicist, biologist, chemist, Dr. Gerald Pollack on far infrared saunas.
Infrared energy is what builds this fourth phase of water. And the idea of a sauna, you know, you go in and you sweat and you receive this infrared energy and you feel great after you come out. I felt the same, and so have so many people. And most of us think, well, you know, it's just some sort of psychological issue, and it might be. However, experimentally, we know that infrared energy builds the fourth phase. Your cells should be filled with this fourth phase, but you know, we tend to be somewhat dehydrated and missing some of this fourth phase. And so what happens is, if you subject yourself to infrared, the infrared is absorbed by your body, absorbed by your cells, and it converts ordinary water to fourth phase water, and then you feel better.
How cool. Yes, you do. Thank you very much, Patrick. Let me interrupt you. Yeah, it is very cool idea. These saunas are other than cool. They get up to about 160. They have two burners on them, one on either side. Extremely low EMFs, no RFs, but there is magnetic energy. Of course, you're in the far infrared healing light, so any magnetic energy that's coming out, well, it doesn't even matter. You protect it, which people don't think about, but you are. And these are, in our opinion, much more powerful than the wooden ones because of the technology. This medical university in Taiwan created these babies some years ago, and they've won about 5 international awards because of the technology. They're very quiet. I use mine virtually every day, and wow, you sweat, and they're fun, and you can put castor oil on your body, on your tummy, on sore muscles. Use the palm of Christ, you know, the castor oil thing. People have been known to put a little turpentine on sore knees and go into the sauna, heat it up. You can put some really fun herbs and things like that, some of these hair treatments, girls and guys, and then dunk your head in there to get your head all heated up while you got all this gooey stuff on there. You've seen these treatments, and they work better with heat. So there's a lot of fun things you can do. And the retail price is $11.95, and we can offer them for you to only people who hear these. We don't put it in print. You'll see it. It says $11.95 right on the website. But if you email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, I'll give it to you for $9.95 delivered continental U.S. It's not a lot. Hawaii, Alaska, Canada, and even over to Europe and places like Australia. We've shipped them to Japan, Costa Rica, Iceland. We've shipped them to, and it's not as much as you think. It's only a couple $100 extra, but you'll get the $9.95 starting price plus the shipping, and you also get the plug that's going to work wherever you live. And they have these funny little plugs over there. You know, we have the right one. All the rest of them, they have the wrong plugs. You know, they got silly plugs, 220 and all of that. And they come right, delivered right like that. So just email me and we'll work it out. Patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
Know the source.
The source.
Oneradionetwork.com. To talk to Patrick, call 888-663-6386. Or email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Wow. Once again, here's Patrick.
Easy for you to say. Bruce says that in Title 10 USC, it states the unorganized militia consists of all able-bodied males between the ages of 17 and 45 who are not members of the armed forces of the U.S. So the federal codification of the militia makes it quite clear the mixing of the military with the militia was never intended to be allowed. That's because members of the military are always considered to be mercenaries, but the militia members were citizens willing to repel invasion, suppress insurrection, and execute the laws of the Union as required under the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, man.
Is that right?
What he said, yes.
He's on it.
Spot on it.
Spot
every able-bodied male, 17 to 45, not otherwise conscripted.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the army. You're not a paid mercenary. You're the militia. You're the official army, if you will. Because we're not supposed to have standing armies, you know? United States.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be a nation defended by its people.
Yeah. Well, when I was in the Navy, we sat a lot, so we were sitting armies. We were your sitting army. I sat and did radio shows on Armed Forces Radio. That was my contribution. Well, but nobody shot at me, which was a very, very good thing. So this is interesting. If I've heard it once, I've heard it 50 times on the radio, regardless of what radio station, which is really curious how the globalists kind of control everything. I mean, the more I think about it after being in radio for nearly 50 years next year, wow.
Mm.
They really do, don't they, the boys?
They do.
They own it all, don't they? They got it all.
Uh-huh.
Probably every outlet of any significance, Andrew Goss, right?
I would think.
Cable, you know, the movies, of course, are all, you know, they got them, all the libs out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. all the TV stations, all the radios. Anyway, what they said was, and you hear it all the time, well, with this new tax thing, and if they take, you know, and they start messing with Obamacare, you know, which is part of this thing, isn't it, taking away the mandate, there's going to be 25 million people without insurance. And it's really, it's unconscionable. It's just, I mean, these people are going to die. This Summers out there is saying, he's talking about how people are going to die when you take away the mandate.
Amazing.
Yeah. But they don't really tell you that the people that are not going to get the insurance, you know what? They don't want it. Why do they leave
that's
that
besides
part
the point.
They leave that part off. So I'm always yelling at the radio in the car. I'm saying, wait a minute. Sure. No, you guys left that part off.
You're missing something.
How is it possible? Help me out here.
Well,
how is it possible that the corporate globalist agenda
96%
has snaked into like a giant squid into the media over the last 25 or 30. I should know it because I'm in the media, but
that's right.
I guess I know how it happens, but it's just weird that it does to me.
It is.
You know, because I was fired control, a lot. You know, I was fired
they
a lot.
Control it all. No. They control the bulk of everything that we refer to.
Everything, right?
Oh. Everything. Wow. For our news. So
news.
When the talking points are the same across the platforms, that's pretty much how they do it.
Of course, and even in talk radio, every time that I would stray off the reservation too far, Patrick, you know, we're going to make some changes. Either we're going to make some changes.
You're going to have to change.
We're
going to
make some changes. Oh, God. You know, I wish I really understood what this Russia thing was about. Do you think it's about the BRICS thing and the gold and the oil and all that, why the United States has got their panties in a wad over Russia over the last 2 or 3 years? Now they just kicked him out of the Olympics, you know. It's amazing what's going on. Yeah, what do you think it is, Andrew Goss?
You know, it's been a lifelong thing for my lifetime.
Yeah.
We've had a thing with Russia.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what started it all. You'd have to go back, I suppose, to the Bolshevik Revolution, 1917, right? So Russia was kind of taken over, if you will, and they've been the other side ever since. So don't know that it's not supposed to be that way. We have to have that great enemy. They've found that they can get us, we the people, to do a lot. Mm-hmm. When we have that great enemy that we need to defeat.
And this started, back in the Bolshevik days?
Yeah, I think that's where it all started.
The Reds movie, you ever see that? It's a great movie.
Yeah. So, you know, to me, Russia, we have more in common with the people of Russia than we do many other people on Earth. The fact that we're so diametrically opposed to each other doesn't make any sense. From the people's point of view, it's strictly a government thing. No doubt about that.
Which was President Trump's argument from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he was right on. He was saying, why don't we get along with these guys, you know?
That's right.
But why don't we get along? Remember? And boy, did he take heat for that. It was like you were talking about the devil or something. It was
like, how dare you?
How dare you? I mean, this is Russia. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Wow. Man.
Yikes.
Yeah. Mm. And now he's going to make their day because Putin just announced today that he's going to be president again for 4 more years.
Yeah, that's the way you should do it.
That's the way you should
do it. I'm the president around
here. I'm going to run for the fourth term as a Russian president in 2018. And
anybody got anything to say? Anybody? No? Okay, good. Yeah, I'm the president.
That's the way you save a lot of campaign money and commercials. Come on, you know.
That wasted a lot of time.
So, Andrew Goss, do you think anything is going to come from Mueller, Kushner, you know, Russiagate. Do you think anything's going to come from this?
It is a curious situation.
It really is. What's your take on it all?
Well, I think those that plead guilty will be found guilty. And those that don't will find some way to work their way around it in trial. So I don't think it's going to splatter on the president, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I don't think it will.
Yeah, it takes a lot to impeach somebody. I mean, the Dems are out there using that word a lot, but, did you just lose your power for a second?
No, we're good.
Okay.
That's what that's all about.
But it really takes a lot to impeach a president, doesn't it?
Sure, yeah. I mean, we've seen that in the past. You can't just, and even if you impeach him, there's no guarantee that you successfully remove him from office.
Right.
which I think is the goal of these folks. So, well, yeah. And you can't just say, oh, that's it, you're impeached, and it's over. So anyway, they have to successfully vote to put him out of office, mm-hmm. on top of the impeachment. Mm-hmm.